You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. You know, this Monday marked a very special occasion in space. Of course, I'm talking about the 47th anniversary of the launch of Sputnik. That's what you were thinking, weren't you? Oh, yeah. Of course, we now have a different day, a reason to mark that red-letter day, because this week a civilian pilot guided the spacecraft Spaceship One to the edges of space and safely came back to Earth. And this being the second time the trip had been made within a week, and that means that this short 62-mile-high flight was enough to win the company the coveted $10 million Ansari X Prize, which is an incentive offered to encourage the development of private space vehicles, very much like the prize that Lindbergh won when he crossed the Atlantic by himself. It was designed to encourage early aeronautical flight. Okay, so now where are we in that historic sequence? The contest has been won. Where does the industry go from here? Some people, I think Bert Rutan was poo-pooing NASA as a thing of the past. Well, what happens now? The contest organizers have plans to actually make it an annual event, offering new awards for height or endurance. And entrepreneurs are already lining up. They're planning ways to make use of the technology used in Spaceship One for tourist flights. But what else is there? Is the race on now? Are we going to actually see a nice race for the commercialization of space? And who are the early leaders? Well, maybe some of them will be on our program today. Joining me to talk about it are my three guests. Bob Halterman is an aerospace consultant in Darnestown, Maryland. He's the former executive director of the Space Travel and Tourism Division at the Space Transportation Association, which is an industry group. He joins us from his office in Maryland. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. First, let me say it's a pleasure to be on the program, Ira, and thank you for inviting me.
Thank you very much. Rick Tomlinson is no stranger to Science Friday. He's the founder of the Space Frontier Foundation, also executive director of FIND, the Foundation for the International Non-Governmental Development of Space in North Hollywood, California. And he joins us from a stateroom on the Queen Mary. Is that right, Rick?
Yeah, it is. We're actually having a conference of the players in this field, and we thought this cruise ship was an appropriate venue, actually. So it's definitely interesting, I must tell you.
That's Back to the Future. Also with us is Jerry Gray. He is an AIAA fellow. That's the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics. He's director for aerospace policy there, and he joined us by phone from Vancouver. Welcome to Science Friday.
Welcome. Delighted to be here.
Thank you. Let me start with you, Rick. You have all these people now on this cruise liner talking about the future. Are they very excited? Are they sharing information, or are they already holding secrets against one another?
All of the above. even in the first 3 hours I've seen today, everything you've just said. There's a lot going on. We have we nearly had a legislative debacle, which we can touch on later, that might have shut down the industry. There are alliances being formed. I just heard from one of the smaller companies that his phone has been ringing off the wall since the X Prize with potential investors. I guess myself, I tried to put a note of realism out there that this is an exciting time, but we've got a heck of a long way to go. And right now, there's only one identified product line for this particular sort of activity, and so there's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, and let me ask you that, Bob. Do you think that people are getting too excited too quickly?
I really don't think so. I think, and Rick knows that there's many people that have been working long and hard on this for this day to finally arrive, and I think it is a breakthrough to have designers, financiers, and entrepreneurs coming together to build something that for the first time by the commercial sector that can take somebody to the edge of space, a domain up till now that has been a right of the government, so to speak, or the world's governments. No commercial concern has yet done this type of feat.
Jerry Gray, what about the regulatory environment for flights? This one, who's in control of ensuring safety or promoting it? Things like that.
Well, the FAA has an office called the Office of Commercial Space Transportation, and Bert Rutan did get a license to fly on an experimental basis to carry people, a person in this case, up to the edge of space. Now, as you know, Richard Branson of Virgin Airlines now has created a new company called Virgin Galactic. He plans to use derivatives of Spaceship One, carrying four or five people at a time up to the edge of space at about $200,000 per crack. Now, he has to get FAA approval in addition to what Rutan got in order to carry passengers. And that process, I think, will be fairly easy to do. Again, people will probably have to sign waivers at this stage of the game.
Right.
But ultimately, I think we'll see more and more people. Branson does not invest money in things that he doesn't think he will make money on. And I suspect that he will sell a large number of these flights. One point I want to make, though, you know, Rutan is a brilliant designer. And his keynote, I guess you'd call, is simplicity. He is a great designer because he does things simply. Spaceship One is a very simple craft. It doesn't even have electronics on board. It flies by mechanical controls. And Spaceship One was a wonderful achievement. But let's face it, its maximum speed is Mach 3. In order to go into space, and really into space on a regular basis, you've got to get up to Mach 25. And you've got to be able to re-enter the atmosphere at that speed. That's a long way from where we are today. What Rutan has done, though, he's shown that with private capital, you can develop and build a flyable spacecraft. That is the big step that he made.
And his rocket fuel is old tires and laughing gas.
Well, that's pretty much a good description, I guess.
Right.
It worked fine. A hybrid rocket is a fairly advanced concept, but the basic fuel that he's using is very simple, very elementary. There is no new technology in Spaceship One. Now, we don't need new technology to go into space, obviously, but if we're going to really be going into space, and I mean into space, into orbit, on a regular basis, we will need it. You know, there's a guy named Robert Bigelow out there. He's another multimillionaire who's created an aerospace company. He has now put up a prize called America's Space Prize, $50 million, and that's for the first person who can fly in orbit and dock with a space station and re-enter the atmosphere at that speed. That is a much larger step forward, I think, than what Rutan has done.
Yeah.
They haven't done it yet, though.
Is the business in taking tourists into orbit, or is it taking them to, like, you know, to the space station and Mir when they had, you know, time to do that and things like that?
Well, I think that's a question that people are going to have to decide on when they put their money up. Ultimately, going into orbit would be much more interesting than just going up and down the way Mike Melvin and Barnes did. But the whole question of going into space on a regular basis has really yet to be established as a commercial enterprise. We've had two space tourists so far, true space tourists, Dennis Tito and Mark Shuttleworth. They pay $20 million each to go to the space station.
Right.
Now, somewhere between people flying high altitudes in Russian jet airplanes, which we do today, and the Spaceship One flight, which is a short flight into space, and real orbital flight, that's where the dollars and cents are going to have to come out. People have to have a market to do that sort of thing. I think there will be one, but it's a question of how soon.
Bob Halterman, where do you think this is going? You're a former executive director of space travel and tourism at the Space Transportation Association. What are people looking for in the near future and in the long term, do you think?
Well, I think there's been several marketing studies and analyses and surveys performed, the latest one done by Frutron here in Maryland. And it shows that there certainly is a market out for both suborbital and orbital space. And I'm quoting right here from Space News. They predicted that by 2021, as many as 15,000 passengers a year could be taking suborbital flights, creating a market worth a total revenue of about $700 million. And going on beyond that, they predict by the same year as many as 60 passengers could be flying in orbital into orbit, bringing another $300 million. So there has been much groundwork laid, and I think what's happened here is some of the work that has been done before through the many conferences held by Rick's Foundation and by the Space Transportation Association has brought together many people, and we did a study in conjunction with NASA that sort of identified all the barriers that had to be taken down and the walls that had to be scaled in order for space tourism to happen. And that study kind of outlined a plan as to how to go about doing those and taking down those barriers. And we've seen a lot of progress made both in the regulatory and the legislative and also in the finance and in the insurance worlds. Mm-hmm. Besides those people are coming forward trying to build these particular craft, competing for the XPRIZE.
Rick Tumlinson, at the meeting there, give us a sense of where you think that the business is heading. Could it be a space station, or could it be a station on the moon? If as long as you're building something, why not put it, on the moon, or
right.
or is it
well,
just flights into near Earth orbit?
Yeah, let me hit a couple of points here, and I agree with. I'm amazed at the amount of agreement we have here. This, if you were looking for a debate, I don't think you're hearing one. So, what's happening right now is there's a confluence of things, and the XPRIZE is just the tip of the iceberg of what I call the alternative space movement of a lot of these companies that are out there working different aspects, including Bob Bigelow. But what we're going to have to do now is begin to look at how we can leverage what we have started here. And that means the government has to take a very enlightened approach. We got within hours today of a bill being passed in the Senate that would have killed the industry, even though the bill had started out as being pro-industry. And what was going to happen was some Senate staffers who didn't really know what was going on had put a little clause in there that would have basically said that the FAA is totally responsible for the safety of anybody riding in these rockets. In other words, you could be in a situation where you couldn't even basically sign away your rights, like you would if you go skiing or something.
Right.
You can
a
sign
waiver.
A waiver.
Yeah.
So that nearly happened, and the bill had to be stopped today. So we have a lot of roadblocks, but on the positive side, what's really interesting to me is it's almost a peanut butter and jelly situation. We have the alternative space community, which is working on spacecraft, cheap ways of doing things, innovation, very low cost access to space on the one hand, and they need more capital than they're going to make from the quote-unquote tourism market. They're going to need more beyond that. I mean, that's going to be good too. On the other hand, we have the government, which has been sort of aimed in the direction of permanence on the moon and Mars. And if the government side of things tries to do things in the traditional aerospace way, there's no way they can afford to do it. So if we can work things over the next year or two the right way and get the folks at NASA, for example, to work as, let's say, just be good customers and offer to hire these guys, like, in the old days of flying, they let some of the early companies carry the airmail, for example. Let's put out some contracts. Let's supplement the Bigelow Prize, which is a fantastic concept. Let's see if we can begin to leverage this and incubate this new industry, which would then, at the same time, lower the cost for the government project. The government's talking about a $25 billion, some estimates, $10 to $25 billion effort to build what Bigelow's offering a prize for of $50 million. And I've talked to several engineers, including shuttle engineers, and they think that Bigelow's can be done for maybe $200 million if you include
and what is the And what project is that? Let me just remind everybody that this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News, as long as I'm interrupting. give us the comparison of the projects there.
The crew exploration vehicle, which is sort of NASA's baseline for what they're going to do to take astronauts to orbit. Now, if you add in the moon component, maybe it goes up to $25 billion. But let's say it's just $10 billion. Rutan built his suborbital vehicle for $25 million. Let's say it's $25 billion. And, it's interesting because, yes, it's much harder to go to orbit. Yes, there's a lot of heat and speeds you have to achieve, things like that. But it's not 1,000 or 10,000 times harder. That's because of our old aerospace way of doing things. And so the Bigelow Prize, to me, is very exciting. And one last note on there is that what we're seeing is the budding off of this new industry, the new space or alternative space industry, in that very soon, or let's say 5 or 10 years, we'll have private transportation companies possibly going to private destinations in space, like the Bigelow Hotel. At that point, you have literally begun to open the frontier, because the government program can go away at that point, and you've still got access to space for the people.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's take a call here on the phone to Zach in Mount Clemens, Michigan. Hi, Zach.
It's Scott.
I'm sorry.
A couple of comments. You remember a few weeks ago you did a show on the intersection of science and science fiction?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the ultimate expression of that is the Heinlein Society Prize, which is only $500,000, but that's pretty good for a science fiction writer to put up.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that I don't know if you folks know it or not, but NASA is working on a magnetic levitation launch system. The exit speed on it is about 600 miles an hour, which isn't a lot, but it's a lot more than you have for free anywhere else.
All right, let me get a reaction. What about this? Do we need, you mentioned this before a bit, that really we don't need any new technology. We just need to sort of streamline and tweak some technology we have to make it cheaper?
Well, this is Jerry Gray.
Jerry,
That's not necessarily the case. The magnetic levitation is simply the same thing we've been using off carriers to shoot airplanes for a long time, only done electromagnetically.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not that's going to be a real benefit for regular commercial flight on a low-cost basis, I think is still up for grabs. NASA is experimenting on it. But we don't really need any really so-called advanced technologies like laser beams or stuff like that in order to establish a fairly low-cost orbital vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, I agree with Rick, that's really the next step. We've got to get a low-cost, reliable orbital vehicle. The next, I would say, a fairly strong jump upward from Spaceship One.
The space plane that we keep hearing about.
Well, actually, Spaceship One is a space plane. Mm-hmm. It's a plane that goes into space. We've had space planes before, the X-15, the X-1, they were space planes. But the real space plane doesn't necessarily have to have wings. It probably will end up not having wings, like the shuttle does. There are much better ways to fly into orbit and to come back without using wings. Now, again, a lot of this does cost money, but I think we don't have to underestimate the value that NASA and the government do provide. For example, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, has put up cash prizes for new technology. NASA has just received, I think it's close to 4,000 proposals for advanced technologies for space exploration from private companies, and they will be giving away something like $600 million over the next year or so for new concepts, new ideas, and new technologies. So the government really can help. You don't have to have people at NASA centers doing the design. The people out there who want to get up new designs, like Bert Rutan, will have an opportunity to do that. And government money is not to be sneezed at. It's good, as long as they don't put too many controls on.
All right, we're going to take a short break, come back and talk lots more about the future of commercialization of space with Rick Tumlinson, Jerry Gray, and Bob Halterman. Your questions, stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about the space industry. Where is it going, the post-X Prize space industry, with my guests, Bob Halterman, Rick Tumlinson, and Jerry Gray. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Rick, you've been listening to what Bob and Jerry have been saying. You agree?
Yeah, essentially I do. And Jerry hit, in fact, your caller's question or point actually heads us in an interesting direction here. One of the big challenges is going to be to get NASA focused on a supportive role for this industry rather than the not invented here, do-it-yourself approach. We have this ironic situation where they're trying to keep the shuttle flying for not too many apparent reasons to me. And in the meantime, we have this industry that could be spurred greatly. If we can get NASA to focus on R&D, if they want to look at maglev, those kinds of things that are beyond the pale for your basic investor or private company, that would be a great role for them. And also to have them focus on space to space. In other words, let's stop NASA from doing any launches, human or otherwise, from Earth to LEO. And then from LEO to the moon, let them focus, their energy and attention
to those types of transportation systems, that would be a huge spur to this industry. It would be an incredible kick for these guys to be able to carry payloads to and from space station, the pieces that we might need for building bases on the moon and Mars or communities out there, instead of, you know, some sort of massive government Shuttle 2 or Saturn 5, which is, you know, it's a single doorway. And as we saw with the Saturn 5, when that doorway closes, you're locked out of the solar system.
Well, if you were to be a company that took over some of these projects, are you going to hire the, you know, the same people, the Boeings, the, you know, Lockheeds, the people like that who make the parts already for NASA, or are you going to hire new people?
I think, well, as far as the people goes, that, you know, that's different than the company.
Yeah, the companies. Yeah.
The companies, you know, they have a tradition of making things fairly expensively. And, you know, Jerry mentioned the Bigelow Prize for $50 million. I think at one point they were trying to get NASA to put up half of that money. And some of the more innovative people at NASA were really pushing for that. And it got screwed up in the NASA system. And I got to tell you, you know, if you've got tens of billions of dollars on the line for the two or three big boy aerospace companies, and you're crossing over and saying, okay, we're going to put a $50 million prize out for that same vehicle, you've just stepped in their feeding trough in a very big way. And I'm very concerned about the kind of things that could go on behind the scenes. You know, these people stand to make billions, and here's somebody that's going to develop it for $50 million. And, you know, as you may know, we did the Mir project, and we were taken out sort of for the same reason. We had a little cheap space station, and there was this big giant one that was worth tens and hundreds of billions. And, you know, we were kind of taken out of the way because it was embarrassing and stepping on feeding troughs. So I'm very concerned about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the other hand, take a look at this latest solicitation that went out from NASA, from the new Space Exploration Directorate. The manager of that program has absolutely insisted there be no NASA input or no NASA guidance to the proposers. When, you know, in the old days, when a guy wrote a proposal for NASA, he wanted to know, well, what does NASA have in mind? How am I going to win this competition? How do I win it? I win it by doing what the sponsor wants me to do.
Yeah, Jerry, I have to say, that's one of the enlightened people I was talking about.
Okay. Well, okay, I think we're talking about the same person.
All right, let me get a phone call in here. Cody in Phoenix. Hi, Cody.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to suggest that maybe we're all getting ahead of ourselves and that this isn't a dawn of a new era of space exploration, just a dawn of a new era of space travel. There's a difference in getting to space and doing science there, just as there's a difference from taking a cruise ship from England to the United States and doing oceanography on the way. I don't see a lot of submarines launched from cruise ships to do oceanography. So,
good point. Good point. We forget that a lot of NASA and some of the most profitable, meaning scientific-wise, has been come from the probes that we've sent to Mars and Jupiter, other places like that, for purely research purposes.
Yeah, but what we're talking about here is the means to do it, the infrastructure, as people say, that's a big word.
Yeah.
How do you build the launch vehicle that gets those wonderful scientific instruments into orbit in the first place?
Yeah,
that's what we're focusing
on. All right, and let me follow that thread and say, okay, when all the hip hip hooray dies down from this X Prize, what concrete next step should we see if there's going to be a concrete next step? What would it be?
Well, we've already seen two of them. Mm-hmm. Bigelow has put up a prize for orbital flight. That's a big next step. We've also gone very nicely into the commercial enterprise with Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic. And here, again, here's somebody who wants to make money on what we've been able to do so far. And I think that's terrific.
Yeah,
that allows us to build towards something better and further and more advanced. And these are two steps that have been taken already. Mm-hmm. I think we'll see many more of them.
Right.
I think what Rutan has done is he's taken what we might call the first baby step, but it's opened a Pandora's box of opportunity. And I think that's really the big thing he's done. He hasn't built a spaceship that's going to go to the moon or even go into orbit. He's built something that says, hey, it's possible. We can go further. And that's a very important consideration.
You don't expect the other contestants in the X Prize, just because they haven't won that prize, to go away.
No. They think they'll continue to. Yeah. A few of them have said that they're going to continue to work. Now they've learned something, and maybe they're going to try to build their own market up, like as Branford is doing, to build up a market in using the spaceships that they're building.
Bob Halterman?
Yeah, I think it's a progressive number of steps that we've talked about in the past. I think first was the suborbital and then getting into orbit for a few revolutions, and then people have expressed their desire in these surveys for a place to stay in space, so that gives credence to putting up a habitat of some sort, a resort hotel perhaps. And then people will be out of the Earth's atmosphere and be able to look at the moon real clearly, and once they see that, I think they would have a desire to go. And so beyond a orbiting resort hotel would be a cruise ship taking people on excursions to the moon and perhaps down at the surface and back, giving them a chance to do some prospecting and perhaps look at Tranquility Base or visit the International Research Station that might be there by then.
Right. Bob has made a very important point here. This has been progressive. You know, first people went to the space camp at Huntsville, Alabama. Then they flew in Russian jet airplanes to the edge of space. Then now there's an outfit called Zero Gravity, which will fly you in an airplane nose over that gives you half a minute or so of zero gravity conditions. These are commercial.
Yeah.
Then we've got Spaceship One and Branson's suborbital flights. And Bob is right. The next thing we're going to find as we build that capability for orbital flights on a regular basis, not for $20 million, but for maybe a fair amount of money, and then larger and larger communities, and then eventually perhaps to the planet.
Rick Tomlinson, you talked about government regulation almost nailing the coffin in earlier today. That didn't happen. What do you see as the role then of the government here? To just sit back and let it happen, or to provide any incentives to, you know, for this fledgling industry?
Well, the government role, when I'm doing lectures, I tell people just look out the door, look out the freaking door at how our government and private sector interact in our culture. The government can create a regulatory regime that makes sure that people on the ground, for example, are safe and that these things are handled the right way. The government can create a level playing field. The government can interact with other governments to make sure that we're not, we have a safe trade regime internationally. There's a Coast Guard function eventually for the government to be able to rescue people who get in bad situations. So all of these things, and maybe even creating some tax incentives, some investment incentives for these people. One thing I did want to address, Ira, because your show is called Science Friday, and I think that's where the caller was going to. You can look at several levels here of how this can enhance science. First of all, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of university students that have been wanting to have access to the microgravity that you can get out of a Spaceship One type vehicle and haven't been able to do so, either on cost or because they're in the queue waiting for government vehicles. So that's going to open up a whole new realm. And also on the zero-G planes that are being flown out there, the same kind of thing. You're going to be able to have a lot more access to science. Also, in the bigger picture, the people that came to America, this new world, originally were coming for, shall we say, selfish, greedy, reasons and enterprise reasons to make money and do that kind of thing. And, maybe that's not clean in the world of science. But in the end, because of the access they had, they created a new nation called America. And this country has revolutionized science across the board completely. So by creating access to the new world of space, where people who couldn't have afforded to go there before can get out there, we're going to see an incredible amount of revolutionary stuff happen in science across the board.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Our number 1-800-989-8255. So do we now just wait for this stuff to happen? I mean, there's a lot of talking going on. How far away is Branson? Does he have any competitors? Would it be good to have competitors?
Ira, you got to look at one thing.
Yeah.
There is one very large commercial space enterprise today. It generated $92 billion, that's with a B, dollars in revenue 2 years ago. This is the satellite communication industry.
Mm-hmm.
How did that get started? It got started because NASA invested about $1 billion worth of taxpayers' money over a 10-year period to create the technology. It was then turned over completely to private industry. NASA does no advanced communication research anymore. It's all done by private industry. Now, see if we can use that model in transportation. NASA still has some fairly good technology programs. I think, and I agree with Rick on this, if NASA is willing to open this technology up for private enterprise to use, and I think they are, then private enterprise can pick that up and take these next steps that we need, move a little further into orbital flight and so on. But we're not going to do it with Spaceship One technology.
Are you talking like hypersonic flight into suborbit? So it's an hour from New York to Tokyo, something like that?
Let's not be extreme. But eventually there can be much better ways of, much lower cost ways of going into space than we have today. And some of it relies on technology. Some of it is just good business.
Yeah, let me just enter in. NASA's forerunner, the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, was explicitly for developing the aviation industry. And I think NASA, we've talked about this before in other conferences, Rick, but we'd like to see part of NASA go back to that model and then take the private industry's requirements for technology development and combine them with their own, perhaps, but at least work on programs that the private sector needs, technology that the private sector needs in order to fold into their infrastructure that they'd like to develop. And one comment from Bob Bigelow, which I thought he said you have to give credit where credit's due. He has had pretty good help from the Johnson Space Center in Houston on developing his space habitat, his inflatables. And he made that comment. He said, at first, he was having some difficulty, but they came around and they're helping him. So I think that can be explored and expanded into other areas, particularly the transportation area.
Yeah, one thing, Ira, too, to amplify that, let's let NASA do the Lewis and Clark sort of activities. Let's leave the building of the railroads to the commercial side of our culture. And one request, you're talking about what people can do right now. One thing they can do is call their senators, especially if they're on the Commerce Committee, and tell them that they support the, I think it's called Bill 3752, as it came out of the House, which would allow people to take the risks and fly in space without being overly regulated. We need that help. And they're coming back for a lame duck session in a few weeks, and it's possible we could get the correct version of the bill passed, which would be a real boon because some people are holding back on investing until they know what the regulatory environment's like.
All right, gentlemen, we'll leave it there, and looks like the beginning of a boom industry. So it certainly will create jobs, and that's big in this political year. So, thank you for joining me, Bob Halterman, aerospace consultant in Darnestown, Maryland, Rick Tumlinson, founder of the Space Frontier Foundation, also executive director of the Foundation for the International Non-Governmental Development of Space, and Jerry Gray, director for aerospace policy at the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics. Gentlemen, good luck to you, and thanks for taking time to talk with us today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Aaron.
Kevin Wade is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick, Paul Masiello, and Enrico Cardi in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music. And we had help today, of course, from NPR librarians Kim Oleski and Alphonse Vinn. If you have questions or you missed any of the stuff we talked about, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. Also, Science Friday's Kids Connection is there, and you can download past programs on your iPod, Audible player, or listen to them on Real Audio. Also, you can send us regular mail, classic mail, at Science Friday, 55 West 45th Street, 4th floor, New York, New York, 10036. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.